We get all sorts on Halloween night. I suppose that's the way of things at any bar, but this one wasn't always the most popular in town. I'd been bartending for a good decade or so, but just moved out to this small town a few years back. Having been brought up and spent most of my adult life in the big city, I'd seen more than my fair share of crazy. Everything from people getting stabbed in brawls that got out of hand to very tipsy college kids streaking to the door, running circles around the damn place, and back out into the night. One Saturday night, the angry husband of one of our regulars, one who was enjoying the company of someone, not her husband, came in, firing off a gun in the place, not even aiming at his cheating wife, and landed a bullet in my shoulder in the process. After getting out of the hospital and enduring a few months of physical therapy, I sort of lost my taste for big city life. Not only that, but with my shoulder and left arm having a bit less endurance than they used to, along with a good deal of stiffness, I couldn't exactly keep up with the busy crowds at the bar. I had nothing holding me in the city anymore. A series of ex-lovers and overpriced apartments and no living family members. So I packed my stuff, jumped in my car, and headed out in search of greener pastures. The college town I ended up in is a fraction of the size of where I was born, which is both a good and a bad thing. Even the most bustling bar around these parts doesn't get especially slammed, even on the weekends. This one, a little hole in the wall called the House Jake Built, does well enough, but it's not always the greatest for earning me a bit of extra scratch. As unpredictable as the people could be in the city, I could clean up a good $400 to $500 worth of tips over the weekend alone. Here, I was lucky if I made half of that over the entire week. My paycheck is a bit fatter than what I made back in the day, likely to compensate for the much fewer tipping customers, but it has its moments, I suppose. Back home, the bar would stay busy, but always more so during holidays. Christmas, of course, had a far more melancholy crowd, getting hammered in an effort to battle those seasonal ghosts. Halloween was much more of a party night, with people in costumes coming in and out, laughing and having a great time. It was nice, but could get obnoxious quickly. October 31st in this little town, as it turned out, brought a very similar sort of traffic into this far more humble tavern, mostly kids from the local college trying to steer clear of the much more bustling group at the more popular bars just a few blocks away. Sure, we'd have the occasional far too drunk for their own good characters we'd had to kick to the curb, but it was often a fun crowd, especially during such times. That's the way it was last year. I found myself chuckling at some of the more outlandish costumes while having to turn away some kids who hadn't put the slightest bit of effort into their fake IDs, but that's the nature of a college town, I suppose. As the hours progressed, my body growing more tuckered out by the moment and my shoulder throbbing like hell, I kept glancing up to the clock mounted on the wall, begging it to hasten itself closer to one arm. That was one thing I did love about living here, the earlier end of the workday. At the old place, I'd be lucky to be heading home by 4, but Jake, the owner of the joint, would insist that everyone was gone by 1, allowing me to bail as soon as the nightly cleanup was done. Around 9 that night, when the blue lights of several police cars illuminated the world beyond our door, something that is quite rare in this small slice of America, just about every head turns to see where they were headed. A few of the more loud-mouthed college boys ran out to the parking lot, cheering the cops on, inspiring their friends still inside to erupt with laughter. I couldn't help but to chuckle myself, my mind flashing back to the couple of years I attended university before dropping out. I hated having to return to my folks' house, as my home life had always been a bit of a train wreck, but it couldn't be helped. My high school grades hadn't been the best, so I had no luck getting a scholarship, and God knows my folks wouldn't fork out a cent to help me. If anything, they kept milking every penny they could from me, making it impossible to afford my tuition. I went from having a blast while making halfway decent grades in between partying to moving back into my old bedroom and paying my deadbeat parents' mortgage and anything else they could squeeze out of me. I feel like an asshole for saying it, but them both passing away within a month of each other might have been the best thing that ever happened to me, had I not felt so guilty about it. Sure, I mourned for them, even with everything they put me through since I was a kid. But even with the stress their passing relieved me of, I could never forgive myself for it. So, maybe 15 or 20 minutes after the cops sped by, and the crowd returns to its otherwise distracted state, one more customer came strolling in through the door. While everyone else in the bar was in one costume or another, me and my boss included, this guy looked like his was an afterthought at best. Jake and I had been critiquing the costumes most of the night, more to entertain ourselves than anything. Sure, my makeshift mummy costume with my buttoned vest over the top of the tattered bandages wasn't the most inspired festive garb, nor was Jake's classic Dracula outfit with a cape and all, but we weren't judging ourselves. Most of the college kids were dressed in cheap department store costumes with the Velcro strips holding them in place. All the girls primarily wore the traditional skimpy fairy tale dresses, and slutty Cinderella, easy Tinkerbell, and check out my jugs Ariel, just to name a few. Of course, regardless of how chilly they had to be this time of year, me and Jake weren't going to downgrade their rankings based on unoriginality. We did drop a few points off the guy in the hot dog costume after several too many wiener jokes, rolling our eyes regardless of how perpetually horny we were at that age. While I couldn't deny that the fake blood splashed across the white t-shirt and torn blue jeans the new patron wore, it looked real enough, as did the matching stains across his bare forearms and face. I couldn't help but let out a sigh at his lack of effort. Halloween having always been one of my favorite times of the year, I did tend to be a little dramatically judgmental about less than inspired costumes. Hell, I'd always rather that someone not even get dressed up rather than cheaping out. When he sat down at the bar with a defeated and depressed look on his face, I was almost hesitant to approach him. Don't get me wrong, I mean, as a bartender, I'm fairly used to the countertop therapy the more melancholy customers expect from time to time, but I just wasn't feeling it at that moment. The hour was late, my feet were throbbing, and my head was beginning to pound from the unusually loud patrons. All I wanted was to get the hell out of there, kick back in my bed, and catch the final hours of the late-night horror movie marathon before passing out for the night.
"What's it gonna be, champ?"
I asked, plastering the best attempt at an inviting smile on my face.
"Fabio's throwing us tequila," he said in a monotone voice, not so much as glancing up from his stare down with his fidgeting fingers.
"I'm gonna need to see your ID first."
At first glance, he looked to be in his early to mid-twenties, but it's always best to be certain in a town like this, especially with my boss lingering. Reaching to his back pockets, letting out a sigh, and patting down every other pocket of his pants, he just shook his head, still avoiding eye contact. I give a glance to Jake, who was sitting in the corner behind the counter, with a what-do-you-think expression. He just shrugged with a slight tilt of the head, an expression that I knew to mean fuck it.
"You got cash on you, kid?"
I asked, hoping to be able to throw him a bone. He just glanced up, finally meeting my gaze, with his dark eyes. As he slipped a $100 bill from his pocket, slapping it on the counter, he gave me a grateful smirk.
"Thanks, man," he said, a strangely exhausted look on his face.
He knocked back each of the shots as soon as I slid them toward him, not even wincing from the burn. He asked for the strongest we had, which is far from the smoothest, something that's damn near caused me to gag each time I sampled it over the years. Now, I'm not one of those guys who likes to essentially dick measure how much I can drink, but I do have quite the high tolerance. I would generally feel confident in saying that I could easily drink any of our regular customers under the table without breaking a sweat. That being said, that skinny kid sloshing back five shots of that nasty drink as though he chugged some Kool-Aid left me almost intimidated.
"You got anything stronger?" he asked with another sigh.
"You might want to let that digest for a sec,"
I said with a chuckle, honestly quite curious to see how far he could take this.
"Nah," he said. "The faster I get fucked up, the better."
"Your call, bud,"
I said, reaching for the bottle of Everclear, the strongest vodka we had. Back at the bar in the city, we had some Polish vodka that would laugh in the face of good old Everclear. But this was the best we had in small-town America. It wasn't the most popular, as the majority of our patrons weren't looking to say bye-bye to their motor functions as quickly as this maybe 150-pound kid seemed to be, but he asked for it.
"Five shots again?"
I asked, brandishing the bottle like elixir before him.
"How much for the bottle?"
he asked. Even with the jacked-up prices this hole-in-the-wall charged, he could easily afford the bottle, the 5 shots he'd already put away, and still have enough left over to call a taxi, if he could even speak by the time his binging came to a close. After he filled the small glasses I offered him to the brim, tossed that back his gullet like nothing more than some freshly squeezed OJ, filled it back up, and repeated the process, I grew more and more curious about what had him chasing after alcohol poisoning with such passion. "Take it easy, kid," I said, hoping to avoid having to call an ambulance. He just glared at me, not breaking his gaze from mine as he swallowed the 3rd glass.
"Takes a lot to get me drunk," he said, still staring at me while filling the glass back up, his thumb hanging over the rim like a blind man hoping to avoid spilling his drink.
"What's your name, kid?"
I asked, uncertain of what else to say.
"Cora Bain."
"That's unusual."
"I'm not from around here."
He still wouldn't break his gaze from mine, nor would I from his. Even when he tips the glass to his lips, his eyes remained fixed. While it almost felt like some childlike battle for dominance, there was something about his unsettlingly vacant stare that made me want to look away, like he was peering directly into my soul.
"So, what's going on, kid? What's got you?"
"I'm not a kid."
"Sorry about that," I said,
my fascination with the guy overruling my annoyance by his attitude. "I didn't mean to be patronizing."
"I didn't mean to snap. Been a rough night," he said, finally cutting his gaze.
"What's going on, sir? You want to talk about it?"
"No. My life is over. Nothing worth talking about."
With a look in his eyes as he spoke, I could tell that he meant those words, or at least thought he did. Even with all the shit my folks put me through, I felt similarly when I heard about the accidents that left my father dead and my mother clinging onto life in a hospital bed. I know it can feel that way sometimes, but I'm sure it's not as bad as you feel right now. Sometimes a friendly ear can help. Though I had previously no interest in hearing another sob story, I felt strangely consumed by the need to know what his deal was. It made no rational sense, other than that inherent bartender gut feeling, but something was, I don't know, wrong about this kid.
"He wouldn't believe me."
"Try me."
He just waved me off, refilling his glass again, and resumed his stare down with his fidgeting fingers. Losing my patience and interest in whatever he had going on, I just walked away from the guy, beginning the early stages of my cleaning for the night. People had already begun to filter out, with the hour growing closer to closing time, leaving only a scattering of patrons here and there, and the odd, skinny guy still nursing his bottle. With only an hour or so to go, only a handful of drinks being served, as I counted down the minutes, I rubbed my neck, moaning with the tension of the busier-than-usual day. Sure, it was nothing compared to an average shift in the city, but between not being as young as I used to be and my currently aching shoulder, I was more than ready to just veg out for a bit.
"Oh, shit,"
the skinny guy said, having climbed back to his feet, swaying from side to side.
"You good?"
I asked with a sigh, hoping I wasn't going to have to help this idiot to the bathroom.
"Yep,"
he said, stabilizing himself with a hand on the bar.
"You're just not used to this."
"Tolerance not quite as high as you thought, huh?"
"Not in this thing,"
he said with a chuckle, patting his hand on his chest.
"I don't think your costume's gonna affect your ability to hold your liquor."
"Costume,"
he said, turning his heavy eyelids to face me.
"That's one way to put it."
"Yeah? What would you call it, then?"
"Then a meat suit is what it is."
"A meat suit? You didn't actually smear meat all over you, did you?"
"No, you idiot,"
he said, making an almost offended expression.
"This fucking bag of flesh."
Okay, I said, walking from behind the counter. Let me give you a hand, yeah?
"Unless you can get me out of this damn thing, ain't nothing you can do for me,"
he said, staggering toward the restroom. I just looked back at Jake, who seemed as puzzled as I was about this bizarre interaction. as did the table of woozy-looking college kids at one of the tables near the back. Shaking my head, I returned to my spot, resuming my rinsing-out glasses. After 10 minutes or so, the guy came stumbling back to his stool, dropping to the floor when his inebriated aim couldn't quite guide his ass to the seat. I started to head around the counter again with an exhausted sigh when a slender hand gripped the bar, pulling its giggly owner back to his stool.
You good?
Yep, the guy said with a giggle.
I'm gonna call you a cab,
I said, jumping from the sudden clap of thunder beyond the door. When I looked back to see the pale and somewhat afraid expression on the face of the kid, I felt my own back tense a little.
I'm gonna hit the road before it gets too bad out there,
Jake said, clapping a hand on my shoulder.
You okay with closing up?
Given that he lived a good 20 miles out, while I was only 5 minutes from my home, I couldn't blame the guy. Sure, I was slightly annoyed by it, considering he hadn't lifted a finger to help me out the entire night, but that was nothing I wasn't used to.
Yeah, I got it,
I said, glancing to the few remaining customers, including the lone individual resting on the counter, still looking like he was almost shivering. As my boss headed out, most of the remaining guests followed him to the door, leaving me alone with the shuddering skinny kid in the blood-stained shirt.
All right, kid,
I said, choosing not to ask what had him so rattled.
It looks like we're closing up early. I'll call you that cab and hang out with you until it gets here. Cool?
No use, he said, still refusing to raise his head.
Okay,
I said with another sigh.
Your choice, but you can't stay here.
I didn't mean for any of this.
Don't sweat it. Look, let me call you that cab, yeah?
No, you don't understand,
he said, pounding his fist on the counter. Cool it, kid. You had too much to drink, okay? Don't start.
No. He's coming. I'm not going anywhere.
If you don't cool it, I'm calling the cops, you get me? Now, either leave, or calm the fuck down and let me call you a taxi. That's your only two options right now.
Yeah. You still want to know what happened tonight?
He said, his voice having reverted to a barely audible whisper. When the strobing blue lights passed by once more, I was momentarily distracted, gazing through the window, turning back to see the kid filling up his glass again. I let out another heavy exhale.
Come on, kid, I whined. Enough already.
They're looking for me, you know?
He said, his words slurring slightly as he poured the next glass down his throat.
They won't.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Don't find me, though. I'll be long gone by then.
What did you do?
I suddenly grew intimidated by the trembling young man, gazing more deeply at the crimson stains splashed across his clothing.
The cops, earlier. Was that you?
Wasn't supposed to be like this. Didn't expect to get stuck. Should have been long gone by now. But I didn't know.
Didn't know what?
I was digging in my pocket for my phone, hoping that I could keep him distracted enough while I inconspicuously dialed 911. He was still glaring at his glass, swirling around the liquid within. Maybe if I just dialed the number while urging him to confess his crime, that would be enough to get the police zeroed in on who they sought. Of course, if this went south, I may end up adding more stains to his shirts by the time they got here.
What's your religious persuasion?
He asked, looking me in the eye again, damn near causing my phone to slip from my fingers.
Why do you ask?
That ain't really a fact how much you believe me.
He said, knocking back the remains in his glass, reaching for the bottle once more.
Heaven, hell. The man upstairs and the other below. Come on, what's your outlook on the whole mess?
Though the answer to that question was easy, that I was not a believer, I had a feeling that was not what he wanted to hear. That being the question he chose to ask before I may learn his story, I had a feeling he may be no friends to the agnostics of the world. It was my father who initially swayed me from the church, as he was an avid believer. My mother was lukewarm on the topic, but she would play the part to appease him. They both stayed hopped up on pills most of the time, barely aware of my coming and going. It was that very addiction that left them both unemployed and in need of me working two jobs while trying to earn an education. They each had plenty of supposed ailments that warranted their precious prescriptions, whining and complaining about debilitating aches and pains on those rare occasions when they would be moderately clear-minded. They wouldn't be fully doped up during those bi-weekly trips to the church, but they were far from clean. During my early years, those I have to squint my mind's eye to recall, my old man was the pastor of the same church they would drag me to. Over the years, they were somewhat functional guardians. I was an avid sinner in my dad's eyes, in need of correcting quite often. If nothing else, after a tumble down the steps of our front deck left him with a far less severe back injury than he claimed, his swiftly formed addiction left him far less able or motivated to beat my ass black and blue. He gave up on preaching soon after, claiming his pain was far too brutal to allow him to stand in front of the room for hours at a time, but he would still be there first thing every Sunday morning and Wednesday night. While my mom wasn't quite as religious as her husband, she was always by his side, albeit begrudgingly, a fact of which she would drone on to me endlessly when we were alone. Honestly, they both talked shit about each other when their backs were turned, which was likely a factor in my mother developing a heart condition. While the doctors would claim that it wasn't particularly severe, she would swear that they didn't know what they were talking about. I suspect they prescribed her the drugs just to shut her up, and she and her husband were as regular at the hospital as they were at the church. After years of supporting them, taking the parental role to them that they never provided me, I grew to hate religion as much as I despised the two of them.
"Never really gave it much thought," I said, hoping that this would be enough.
"I suppose a lot of folks are that way nowadays," he said, his hand trembling as he attempted to pour the final remnants of the bottle into his glass.
When the hail began to pelt the window, interrupting the silence that followed his words, I once more let my phone slip from my hand.
"You don't gotta hide, friend," the guy said with a sigh, glancing up at me from his glass. "They won't make it in time, but you can try it."
"In time for what?"
He just smiled at me, a smile that appeared strangely inhuman and distorted. A smile that made me fear I may not make it home tonight, after all.
"I ain't never done this before, you know,"
he said, cutting his gaze back to the bottle, trembling in his hand as he poured the last dregs into his glass.
"Thought it'd be simple enough. Just hop in, fuck some shit up, and bounce right out again. But now I'm stuck here till he drags me back to the pit. Nothing I can do about that."
He wasn't making the slightest bit of sense, assuring me that he was not of sound mind in the least, with any potential words I could offer frozen in my throat, silenced by the fear building within me. I couldn't begin to fathom my next move.
"You think I'm nuts, don't you?"
he said with a chuckle.
"You ain't wrong, I suppose. Wish you ain't right either.
How about I call that cab, yeah?"
I said, my voice trembling almost uncontrollably.
"Maybe you can still be long gone before..."
"There's nowhere I can run," he said, pounding his fist on the counter again. "He'll find me, no matter where I go. Ain't shit I can do about that."
"Let me help you, kid,"
I said, hoping to calm this lunatic down, or at least to the point at which I may be able to escape with my life.
"Stop calling me kid," he said through gritted teeth. "Moloch called me the same damn thing. Condescending prick. I ain't no fucking kid. Just got in over my head is all."
"Yeah, this guy's fucking nuts," I thought,
trying to edge my way closer to where we kept the pistol stored under the bar. I hadn't run into a need to use it before, but it was one of the first things Jake introduced me to when I began working here. He told me about a time or two he had pulled it from its holster just to put the fear of God into a less than mellow drunk on occasion. After getting to know the guy more over the years, I learned to tell when his eyes were turning brown from one tale or another. Given the fact that he never shows the slightest motivation to help actually run the place, I highly doubted that he ever got his hands dirty in the past. Still, just knowing the gun was there was a bit of a safety blanket on the rare occasion a patron would get a little on edge. Though I'd never had a reason to pull it on anyone before, I had a bad feeling I would be popping my cherry tonight.
"You see,"
the guy said, having returned to his pensive stare off with his glass.
"We don't come up to this plane much anymore. Not as often as folks think, anyway."
"Huh?" I said, my being cut off guard with his words before being able to prevent my tongue from flapping a response. "What are you talking about?"
"Back in the day, from what I've been told, the elders would pop up anytime they wanted, taking control of all kinds of folk in lofty positions. But now, not so much. You know what it's like, growing up hearing those stories."
I guess it's always hard to live up to expectations," I say, playing along with his delusions, hoping I could keep things calm until I could figure a way out of this.
"You have no idea. I mean, I ain't no kid, you know, but I'm older than I look in this thing,"
he said, patting his chest again.
"Still, I would have loved to be around during those golden years Moloch told me about, ever since Lucifer turned over a new leaf, or whatever. Hell just ain't no fun anymore. That was long before my time, though."
I barely even registered what he was saying at first, still trying to hide my attempts to both call the law and reach the revolver. When he dropped that little slice of madness, I instantly grew aware of how far gone this guy really was. If he truly believed what he was claiming, something I wasn't able to let sink in at the time, I knew there would be no talking him down if he lost his cool. When the clapping thunder grew so loud that it seemed to shudder the entire building, causing me to jump like a frightened child again, the guy just let out a heavy sigh.
"Ain't got much time left now,"
he said, rubbing his temples. Look, I said, my voice trembling as much as the floor. How about I give you a ride, huh? I can take you back to your house, or..."
"Ain't nowhere I can hide. Have you been listening? He's coming, and he don't tolerate demons that cross the line anymore."
There are always options, kid. I know that..."
"Stop calling me a fucking kid,"
he shouted, pounding the bar so hard that the surface split down the center. I just stood there, frozen in place, barely able to form a coherent thought. The look in his suddenly darkened eyes made me realize that he may not be delusional after all, that the sinister gaze glaring through my unblinking eyes may not be human after all. Not by a long shot.
"I'm not a child,"
he said, almost whispering, a melancholy look taking the place of that rage-filled expression. I wanted to say something, anything, in an attempt to figure a way out of this, but all I could fathom at the time was my blood joining the dried, crimson stains on his shirt.
"I'd always dreamt of coming up here and sending the fear of hell back into this damned world, but I never actually entertained actually doing it, you know. Wasn't until Moloch found me, talking about reigniting the old ways, that I started to consider it."
When he fixed his gaze back on his drink again, I finally convinced my fingers to listen to my fracturing mind. I whipped my phone from my pocket, dialing the 3 digits I could only hope would lead to my salvation. Though I muted the speakers as to not alert my captor to my actions, regardless of the fact he assured me I was welcome to make the call, the soft chuckle he made assured me that he knew damn well what I was doing. He didn't call me out on it, nor did he threaten me in any way. He just shook his head before beginning to speak again.
Malak didn't come out and tell me to do this, you know. He just told me all about some of his experiences with possession and how easy and natural it felt. He did kind of explain how to do it and how to sneak through the walls into this world. But I made the decision to do it. I suppose I wanted to make him proud, to show him that I was worthy or whatever.
Please, I said, speaking a little louder than I had been, in hopes of conveying to those on the other end of the phone how dire my situation was. I'll give you whatever you want. Just let me go. Don't hurt me. He just chuckled and shook his head again, letting out another heavy exhale. He didn't respond to my words, nor did he so much as acknowledge them, aside from his exhausted sigh, only continued his bizarre story.
When I ended up in this little shithole of a town, I just jumped the first meat bag I came across. Like Malak has said, it was as easy as pulling on a fresh pair of pants.
The rain and the hail grew even more intense. The wind practically cracked the windows from the pressure outside. I could hear the glass straining from it, while the door rattled so hard, I just knew it would burst open any second. The guy in the blood-stained shirt glanced over to the tremoring entrance, his lower lip quivering ever so slightly. He closed his eyes, knocking back the last dregs of his drink.
Give me another drink, will you? The stronger the better,
he said, tossing his wallet onto the cracked counter. I just pulled the first bottle I saw, paying little attention to what it was, laying it gently before him.
Much obliged,
he said with a nod, filling his glass, knocking it back, and filling it again.
Might as well enjoy it while I can.
The police are on their way, I said, in an almost embarrassed tone, almost feeling ashamed with how pitiful he looked all of a sudden.
Yeah,
he said with another nod. You can still make a run for it.
When I took this scrawny little shit,
he said, ignoring my words again.
I can't even explain how it felt. Not in a way you'd understand. I'd never felt this kind of power before. In hell, I was just an average asshole, you know. Nothing special. But in this, I felt like a fucking god. I just couldn't help myself. Couldn't resist it.
What did you do? Again, the words slipped my lips before I could stop them, feeling both intrigued and absolutely terrified at the same time.
I killed him. Snuffed him out as easily as if I was taking a piss, even if I only recently learned how to do that part,
he said, gesturing to the restroom with a tilt in his head, laughing like a damn lunatic again.
Everyone in that gas station I hopped into, the damn guts spilled out with a flick of my wrist. It was intoxicating.
Jesus fucking...
Hey, watch your language,
he said, laughing again before tipping the bottle to his lips.
The problem, though, when I came down from that initial high, I realized that I'd be in a shit ton of trouble if I didn't vacate the area right then and there. If I could have escaped, leaving this asshole to take the heat, no one would have been any the wiser. Turns out, though, getting out of this meat suit ain't nowhere as easy as getting into it. I got stuck, got scared, panicked, and ran, all the while still trying to break out. By the time it finally dawned on me that I'd had no choice but to face what's coming to me, I found myself standing right outside this bar. Figured I might as well experience getting good and fucked up before the end of the road.
The door finally gave way. Ferocious wind, hail, and rain blasting in from the outside. I whipped my head to the side, startled by the tables being caught in the veritable hurricane, tumbling across the floor. The fear ramped up to the next level with the knowledge that I was trapped between the hell, between these walls and beyond. It wasn't just my mortality that scared me so much. Not the terror of sharing the chaos-filled room with an actual demon from the pits of hell, nor the escalating storm that may tear the building to its foundation. My whole life, I had never believed in heaven or hell, gods or devils, or angels and demons. If this guy was what he claimed, then I had no doubts that I may indeed be accompanying him on his journey back home. The accident that claimed the life of my parents was due to their brakes failing on their old caddy, a vehicle that I was charged with maintaining over the years, just like any other responsibility they shunned. I was miserable and bitter back then, begrudging them both, as well as their ever-growing list of needs and demands. When I had to perform the brake job, only days before that ill-fated drive left them in ruins at the base of that mountain, I can't deny that part of me hoped for that very outcome. It was my fault my father died that day, and that my mother suffered for weeks until she faded away in that hospital bed. My hands that led them to death's door. My actions that damned me.
The thing is,
my lone customer said, almost directly into my ear, causing me to spin in place to see him standing right in front of me.
Even though I knew I was fucked, I still wanted more. More blood, more suffering, more death.
I backed away from him as he paced close.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Sir, fumbling my hands between the counter, praying to everything I had never before held holy that I could reach the revolver in time.
I only got seconds at best,
he said. An unnaturally wide grin almost splitting his face in two.
It's a kind of damned if I don't and damned if I do sort of thing. Might as well enjoy one more for the road. What do you think about that, kid?
The windows blew apart, raining glass across my back and the shuddering counter. Bottles and glasses shattered beside me, while the eyes glaring into mine darkened even more than they had before. I could see his lips moving, but I couldn't make out a single word through the chaos around me, shaking and cracking the walls of the place. As he lunged, I thrust my foot into his gut, causing him to lose his footing and drop to the shuddering floor. I jumped for the gun, yanked it from its holster, and fired 3 rounds into his chest before he could get back to his feet. To my horror, this only made him laugh, with blood streaming from his chest and mouth. As I tried to leap across the counter, I felt his tight grip around my shoulders, yanking me back before he tossed me to the ground as though I were as light as a fucking pillow. He just stood there, glaring down at me, his mouth drooling crimson like a rabid Sasquatch. As he outstretched his hand, his eyes widening with manic fury, a blinding stab of lightning accompanied the violent boom of thunder, paralyzing my every sense as I screamed in madness against my violent end. I was still screaming while everything fell silent around me. I just knew that I was dead, falling weightlessly through the fabric of reality, descending to the fiery pit in which I would spend eternity in torment. When I hesitantly blinked my eyes back open, after coming to the realization that I was not only not falling, but sitting, that I once more found myself unable to fathom the reality I looked upon.
All right, mate.
The well-dressed man with his blonde hair tied back in a ponytail said. Whether it was him I took note of first, or the fact that not only was the bar not in ruins, but the storm outside the unbroken windows had fallen silent and still. The slender man, wearing a pinstriped gray vest, black tie, and white shirt with the sleeves rolled up, seemed to be studying me with a strange look of something resembling concern. When I glanced to his side to see the guy who had exposed me to the most batshit crazy night of my life slumped over the bar, seemingly sleeping it off, I once more found my words trapped in my throat.
Oh, what?
He's gone. Well, gone from inside him anyway, the stranger said with a shrug, as though these were completely average events.
Who?
I stuttered, though I feared I was well aware of the answer. That's not important, he said, fishing a pack of cigarettes from his pocket, raising his eyebrows as if to ask if this was acceptable. I just fished the ashtray from beneath the counter that Jake would often utilize on those rare occasions we would stick around until closing time.
Cheers, mate,
the man said, lighting the tip of his smoke, offering me the pack and lighter. I just shook my head, not breaking my eyes from his alarmingly kind face. He just gave me a wink with the click of his tongue, in that very British way. It wasn't until the gesture that I took note of his accent, though I highly doubted that he was indeed some random limey in a nicely tailored suit vest.
What'll happen to him?
I asked, my voice still barely breaking a whisper.
He'll answer for the lives he took that night, he said, taking a deep drag from his cigarette. Though I'm well aware that he was, well, encouraged to do this. Being a gullible fool is no excuse for his actions. He, talked about a, Moloch?
The man just nodded with a deep and pensive stare, something that gave me a glimpse of the far older being that hid behind the more youthful face. It was at that moment when the reality of whom I truly looked upon sank in, inspiring my limbs to begin trembling once again. I arranged for a, well, let's call it a shell, or a husk, for Corobain to dwell within for a time to serve the mortal sentence of his crimes. He cannot escape this vessel, nor can he reach his natural abilities while locked inside. It will age and weaken just like any human body while he lives out the remainder of his mortal years behind bars. Once his time on this plane is done, well, I'll see just how much he's learned from this experience, and go from there.
I already called the police. They should...
Don't worry, mate. All taken care of, he said with a crooked and somewhat mischievous smile. The authorities were, well, redirected to the man for whom they saw. Justice, I assure you, will be served, my friend.
What about Moloch? I mean, if he was pulling strings or whatever, what...
Moloch, he said, with a disturbingly hateful tone. We'll account for his actions soon enough. There's no need to concern yourself with this matter any further. As his momentarily furrowed brow let loose again, he gave me another crooked smile, raising the cigarette back to his lips. We sat in silence for a time while the recently vacated kid slumped over the counter began to stir. It wasn't until then that I noticed that his shirt was no longer stained with that crusted crimson spray, nor the holes left in the wake of the bullets I fired into him. I glanced from the sleeping young man back to the bright eyes of the ponytailed stranger, suddenly growing more intimidated by his reason for lingering, if his business was truly finished here.
I don't suppose I could trouble you for a pint, he said, giving me something resembling an apologetic look.
Without a second thought, I grabbed a clean glass and filled it to the brim, hoping my absent-minded selection of lager would be his liking.
Thanks, mate, he said, pulling a 20 from his vest pocket, to which I shook my head.
On the house.
You're the governor,
he said, with another tongue-click wink. While he took a long drink from his glass, I poured myself a beer, not to necessarily join him in a drink, but to enjoy what I had to assume to be my last, before facing my own justice for my crimes. It honestly surprised me, the longer I shared his company, how quickly I came to peace with what was surely to come. Sure, though, I had never actually believed in where I was likely headed. Before the sun would rise, I was still well aware of the reputation of the place that my endless torment had only just begun. But in many ways, finally accounting for the premature death of my parents made me feel so much lighter in a bizarre way.
It wasn't your fault,
the man said, breaking the strangely comforting silence. He snuffed out the butt of his smoke in the ashtray, pulled another from his pack, not allowing his eyes to meet mine as he focused on the task at hand. I just sat there, my mind spinning in circles, both with the crazy events of the night and what he was insinuating. What this man,
of all people, was saying.
You're working, what, two jobs, yeah?
I just gazed at him when he glanced back up at me, my jaw dropping slightly.
You were a kid, Samuel. An exhausted, overworked, and taken for granted child. Your parents took advantage of your kindness, are pushing aside your needs in favor of their own.
My heart was racing so much that my head was growing more loopy by the second. Was this a trick? Did he want to build within me a shadow of hope before snatching it away from me? The brakes didn't fail, mate.
But they did. I mean, that's what the report said.
And how accurate can any report be on a car in that sort of shape? Crumpled like a crisp bag at the bottom of a hill.
No, I fucked up. When I was changing them, all I could think about was how tired I was of this shit. At that moment, I wanted them gone. I made it happen. It's my fault.
It's not, Samuel. Even with the chaos they fueled in your mind and heart, you followed every instruction to the letter. Even with your exhaustion and frustrated emotions, you performed that brake job as well as any trained mechanic. It was a blowout that caused your father to lose control of the vehicle. Well, that combined with his reflexes being greatly lessened by his precious pills.
But I wish them dead,
I said, tears streaming down my face.
I was cursing them and everything they put me through with every turn of the ratchet. I wanted them gone. I wanted to be free.
Trust me, mate, he said, reaching his hand across the counter, wrapping his fingers around my trembling shoulder. Everyone, at one point or another, no matter how much they have going for them, has wished their parents dead at one time or another. If that alone was all it took, every child would be an orphan. The warm touch of his hand almost calmed my racing pulse. I once more looked into his kind eyes, sniffling from the slowly dissipating flow of tears. For minutes, we looked upon one another this way, until he gave me another smirk, gently pulled his hand from my shoulder, and chugged down the remains of his beer.
Well, I believe I should be going, he said,
taking one final deep inhale of nicotine before smearing his cigarette next to the other. He got to his feet, slowly making his way to the door. As he reached for the exit, he turned back to face me one last time.
It's time you forgive yourself, mate.
I still just glared at him, sniffling back the tears.
After all, he said,
there was nothing to forgive in the first place. As he pushed open the door, the cool night breeze blowing in from the outside, he stopped again, just halfway glancing back over his shoulder.
One last piece of advice before I go, he said,
that smirk still visible through the shadows. Leave the married women alone, yeah? The next bullet from a pissed off husband might just hit its mark. With that, he walked out, the door closing shut behind him. I still just stood there, my heart thundering as hard as the storm had, what felt like hours ago. Slowly, my shaky legs lowered me back to my stool, while I chugged down the rest of my beer in an attempt to wrap my mind around everything. When I finally got control of my extremities again, I washed out the two glasses, as the kid slumped on the counter began to raise his head.
What happened?
I think you maybe had a bit too much to drink,
I said with a laugh, fishing a bottle of water from the fridge. How about you get hydrated, and I'll give you a ride back home. Over the weeks that followed that Halloween night, though it was still haunted by the reality of things I never believed in, I felt more alive than I think I ever had before. Though I can still clearly recall the events of that crazy night, I can't recall the face of the stranger who saved both my life and my sanity. I remember the conversation we had, and the guilt he relieved me of, as well as the final piece of advice he shared. But that's it. As deeply as I gazed into his strangely warm and friendly eyes, I can't as much as recall what color they were, nor any of his features. Melvin Child, a young man in his early 20s, was arrested for the murder of 7 people at a nearby gas station that October 31st. The video footage showed him stabbing his victims with a long kitchen knife. Though he is quite small and slender, he outmaneuvered those who attempted to fight back, fleeing the scene of the crime moments later. though the district attorney would not entertain his claims of being a demon trapped in a false human shell, seeing this as an attempt to secure an insanity plea, he had to go through the motions. Ultimately, his claims were tossed out as an effective, if somewhat exaggerated, performance, and he earned several life sentences for his crimes, one for each victim. The town mourns the loss of the lives taken by that madman, but even those close to the victims found a way to move on with their lives after a time. Though I didn't personally know any of those unfortunate souls, other than perhaps a passing glance at the bar on occasion, my heart breaks for their families. My life, or my outlook on it, has changed dramatically over the past year. Though my stiff and achy shoulders will always be a reminder of lines I don't need to cross anymore, it doesn't seem quite as painful as it used to. Perhaps it was my guilt that drove me into the arms of the woman I had no business in messing around with. Also, there's no future or commitment in such relationships, things of which I believed myself to be unworthy back then. Maybe I wanted some pissed-off husbands to finish me off in hopes of paying the cost I thought I owed to fate. But that's not who I am anymore. I met a truly amazing woman a few months back, someone else who has altered my perception of the joy and wonder in life. I was spending this Halloween with her, rather than the extravagantly costumed, drunken patrons of the second most popular bar in town. Jake wasn't happy about it when I told him I'll be skipping this one, but he'll get over it. For me, this season now meant more than just a time of year to which other people enjoy themselves. Though I always enjoyed this time of year, finding a fraction of the happiness that always eluded me in the laughter of others, it has taken on a whole new meaning now. For me, Halloween will always be the anniversary of when I finally let go of the burdens I had carried my whole life. The night I both almost died and learned to live again.